Good morning. Everybody awake? Okay, so my name is Darren Fisher. I'm the dev lead for NetMon. I'm going to give you a brief overview of our API and give you basically a feature breakdown of what you can do with it. Talk about some of the challenges that you may or may not incur while using our API, and also talk about some of the environmental concerns that you may run into. When environment means like the computing environment. Okay, so during the presentation, you can feel free to stop me while I'm talking to ask questions. The first two questions are free. After that, it's $20. You just leave your checks or money orders over there. And I'll have a general Q&A afterwards, so if I ask you to defer your questions, then there'll be another entire presentation. Right, so let's get started here. A couple of quick things about our API. So our API is C. Right, so it's not C++, it's not C#, it's C. Right, so we don't have any classes, there's no managed code, we don't do any exception handling or anything like that. So most of the API return error status, like error underscore success, error underscore not found, yada, yada, yada. We invented a few of them for some special cases that we didn't find a win error code for, but for the most part, things that go wrong are returned via those error codes. The interface to our API is a .h file. And we use handles for context management. So for example, instead of using an object to represent a capture, you get back a handle that represents the internal state of a capture or a parse frame or a raw frame in your user mode code. So most of the API is threat safe. The implementation lives in a DLL that we install in your system when you install NetMon. It's enumapi.dll, and it's placed on the default path. So there is a little bit of hope. Well, first let me ask a question. How many people here are managed code developers? Quite a few. And people that are on live meeting, if you use managed code, press the any key on your computer. Right. Nobody? Okay, good. So there is some hope for you managed code gurus, right? So first of all, we have within NetMon, we ship what is known in the .NET world as pinvoke layer. Right, so we went through the process of creating a C# source file that is a pinvoke wrapper on top of all of our API, all of our structures, and everything that's exposed in our .h file, just the source. So there's no assembly, there's nothing placed in the GAC. So if you want to write a managed application, that's the preferred method to accomplish that. So include that CS file into your project, call those API the same way you would call the C style. Now, as was mentioned before, there are some caveats to doing this in a managed world, right? So given the fact that we don't have objects and we use handles to represent a lot of things that the API manages for you, those things don't really play nice in .NET, right? Garbage collection and IntelliSense and all the other cool things that you get with the .NET programming language. So like if you use PowerShell, for example, it would be kind of a challenge to run or create an API application out of the box. So you have to do a little bit extra work to maybe build an assembly that has that CS file. But we've heard the feedback as far as people want to write managed applications. Okay, so the API is designed for user mode. We do have a couple of kernel mode components in NetMon that handle capturing. Those are not really exposed to you in through the API. You don't have. There are a few considerations that you have to be aware of depending on what platform you're running on. So, for example, if you're running your expert on, you're running your API client on XP or Server 03, there's a different capture driver implementation on those operating systems than there is on Vista Server 08 and above. Threading model becomes a little tricky there. But that's pretty much it as far as your environmental concerns when writing API. Most of the other things work pretty well across platforms. So for example, you can also write a service that runs as a local system account. Currently with 3.3 though, there's a little gotcha with the if you want parsing. So if you want to write a service that does capturing at startup perhaps, you want to capture all the traffic that is going on as you're booting your system, you can write an API to do that and install that as a service. Or there's an alternative, you can use ETL tracing on Vista 1.7, I'm sorry. And they have some options for doing that boot up capturing. And there's a nice blog that Paul, I don't know if he put it on the internet yet, but there's a nice blog that describes how to control ETL and consume. All right, so what the heck does our API do anyway? So most of the things that you can do with our Netmon UI or NMCAT, you can also do with the API. So things like capturing live traffic, reading capture files, reassembly, parsing, etc. You can also do other things like loading PCAP files or again, ETL traces with our API, the same as you can do with the UI. So if you're familiar with the UI, you know that it's very powerful. Right? I would say that it covers, this wild guess, but 90% of our networking scenarios you can probably accomplish with our UI or NMCAT. But for the more special case analysis scenarios, that last 10%, how do you do that, right? So if you want to do more in-depth analysis of traffic flows or you want to write some kind of spy software or, you know, hack somebody's computer, I don't condone that activity, but if you did want to do it, then the API would probably be the course that you want to take. So experts are one method that we provide with Netmon to do that, and you accomplish that using the API. So who in here has actually used an API before? So just three people have used it? I mean, any API, right? Okay. Good. So when I'm throwing these terms out, you guys know what I'm talking about. And so how many people are here to learn how to write experts? And the rest of, I remember from the first question that they were doing specific diagnostics for your job, right? Okay, good. So another thing that API lets you do is enable create this sort of custom application. So fill in that 10% gap that Netmon and NMCAP can't do for you. So with the API. Okay, so what comes with Netmon? When you install Netmon 3.3 today, you get a help file, you get a header, and a library that you can use to build your application. Give you some sample code. Right? This is all for free, right? But there's one thing that you can't do with any of those things, and redistribute them. Right? So there's a couple of key reasons why we want to prevent or don't recommend that you go and ship your own netmon api.h or your lib file or even the DLL file. Biggest reason is compatibility. Right? So we update netmon, try to do at least once a year. Sometimes I don't think we've ever released lately over a year time frame. So if these experts or your API applications get out in the wild and you have your, well, let's think of the, here's an analogy for you instead. If you remember XP or Windows 3.1, there was this concept called DLL hell. I don't know if you remember that, but basically people would redistribute Windows API, like user 32 and all these other things, and customers would install them on the newer OS, and hey, this doesn't work. Why? Because you've got some proprietary or old dated version of this operating system binary on your machine. And so that's what we're trying to prevent with the no reason. The recommended practice is tell them to install Netmon first. So pretty compact little MSI, you can add to /qb- and they won't even know what's going on. So if you want to ship your code to an end user, just recommend that they install Netmon first. There's also an SDK available that was mentioned in the previous talk that includes some managed examples of Solarflex site. Questions? Okay, so let's dive a little bit deeper into some of the specific features of the API. And let's take a look at capturing. So first question you want to ask with capturing is, what the heck are you capturing from, right? So Netmon supports capturing from NDIS interfaces. So who knows what NDIS is? Quite a few people, right? So anything that NDIS can recognize as a network adapter, you can get traffic from with Netmon and our API. So that's mini ports, PC MCIA cards, RAS, tunnels. In Win 7, they've got this new 3G capturing interface, which we capture on mobile broadband network. So we handle all of that with 3.3. NDIS sees it, we can see it too. But again, if you're doing live capture and you distribute the DLL without installing Netmon, it won't work because there's no driver there for it to capture from. All right, so the API, what an adapter representation is basically an ordinal. Right, so there's a few functions for querying how many adapters there are and getting information about each adapter, but once you have that, you just get a number to represent it. So if you have LAN adapter, Broadcom, yada, 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 that'll be one. If you have a wireless, that'll be two. And that's how you would identify them when you're actually using the API. And again, I'm not going to go into code here. Right? So all of our API is very well documented in the CHUM file. So I'm assuming all of you guys can load that up and look at the specific details of calling the API. Right? So I won't wait walking through each function. As I'm going through here, and if you have a question about a particular function, maybe you've already browsed through the CHUM file, go ahead and fire away. So for live capture, there's a few things that we don't support that you may wish we did. Right? One thing is integration with the Windows filtering platform. Right, so if you want to capture things that are outside of the NDIS stack, right now we don't have a good way for you to do that. We also don't have a good way today to control ETW traces. Right, so right now the practice is to use NetSH, and there's a list of providers and there's a nice interface for calling that, but we can't control that with Netmon the way you can control live traffic from a NDIS network adapter. So how do frames get delivered to your API client? So they are done by a callback. Okay, so there's a few gotchas or things to be aware of with the threading model for the callback. So normally they use the same thread context that is was used to install the open the capture engine, and there's an API for doing that. And you also, like for most API that do callbacks, you can provide your own 32 or 64-bit payload that comes along with each one for if you want to do like custom data passing from your app to the callback function and give it some relevance. And when the callback comes, you don't actually get the frame data yet. We give you a handle to the data. So, and there's another API for actually retrieving the actual frame, raw frame data. So there's a difference between a raw frame and a parsed frame. And I'll get once the callback comes, you get a handle to the raw frame. So you can get all of it, you can get part of it, right? So maybe you're only interested in the headers, or you want to do protocol identification, or you can get the entire payload. Along that point, when you open the capture, every frame that is seen by the adapter is delivered to the callback. So there's no filtering done inherently by the API. So if you want to do capture filtering, you have to implement that in your API client. So, and we have a set of functions to accomplish that. So that can get kind of chatty based on how fast your network frames are arriving. But there is, excuse me, there's a neat feature that we added in NetMon 3.2, which is buffering, frames. Right, so we noticed that as the network speed went up, our capacity for handling throughput was tested, right? So we were dropping frames, like if you get up to gigabit speeds. So for 3.2, we added this user mode caching, right? So the frames are delivered, the NetMon Capture Engine buffers these frames for you and delivers them at a pace. You can control the pace that you can consume them, but they're still capturing and it's being cached to the disk instead of falling off the memory buffer. Question. The question was, how are the timestamps applied to frames as they arrive to the, your API? So the answer to that is that they are stamped when they are delivered via our capture engine. Right, so I have to go a little bit into the architecture of the capture engine, but before they are buffered, they're delivered via a callback from the kernel to the our user mode component of our capture engine, at which point they are stamped there, and then they are cached. Right, so by the time you retrieve them off of the cache, they have the correct timestamp. The question was, we tested with gigabits network speeds for 3.2. So the question was, how about 10 gigabit? So the answer is, we don't know how we perform under those scenarios yet. Okay, so the architecture should scale, but we don't have that hardware to do that verification. There's a comment. So the comments here were reiterate. So for our testing for NetMon, we tested on a top speed of 1 gigabit. The feedback was that what about 10 gigs? So that seems to be a very common scenario these days for lab infrastructures. So if you want to capture that I don't know if you do this on a computer or have some kind of tap into a router, however you want to get this data, we haven't verified that we scale up to 10 gig speed. Right, so I can segue, since this seems to be an interesting topic here. What are the considerations? What would bound you in that case? Right, so as you scale up your network speed, let's think about what are the factors that are coming into play when it comes to dropping frames. Right, so there's two factors to be aware of. One is the capacity of our lightweight filter driver to collect those frames and put those in our kernel mode circular memory buffer. Then there's also the retrieval of those buffers to user mode, and then the I/O involved with writing those to the disk. And so those are the two key factors that are going to come into play. So you're bound by the ability, the lowest common denominator there is the disk I/O. So how fast can we pull those frames out of the kernel mode and cache them to the disk without filling up that memory circular buffer in kernel mode? So the load on your machine will come into play as well, so because this is all CPU bound. Unfortunately, we don't leverage chimney offload scenarios. Right, so if there was a way that we could do that, maybe that could give you some relief there if we don't scale. For our lightweight filter driver, NDIS will say, somebody wants to see this data, so we're not going to offload anything. Right, but if we played a little nicer there, we perhaps could leverage it today. Oh, and last but not least, there are also API to control the flow of frames to your callback. So if your user mode callback is getting overwhelmed, you can pause it and frames will be buffered for you and delivered whenever you resume. When you stop, there are two behaviors that you can control and how to deal with that cache of frames. So you can tell the API to stop and deliver whatever's cached, or you can say stop and, yeah, I'm done, throw it away, even if you've got 10 megs of frame sitting in the buffer waiting to be delivered. So you can control that with the API. Okay, so what are we doing on time? Okay. So now, parsing. So this is where things get a little tricky. All right, so So the best way to say this, I'm going to scratch the surface of what you can do when it comes to parsing. Scenarios just expand almost exponentially when it comes to actually consuming network data. So I'll try to refrain from diving into any specific things. But the key thing to keep in mind about parsing is that NetMon has two sets of code. One is the code that actually does the parsing engine, the capture engine, UI, all this other fun stuff. The other set of code is our MPL parsing language. So to put some perspective on this, when I was sitting over here while the other presentation, I was counting lines of code of our product versus our parsers. And so we have 363,000 lines of code that actually deliver NetMon, the API, the NMCAP, et cetera. Our parsers are 425,000 lines of code in the MPL. But so in this parser world is bigger and it changes much more dynamically than our core engine code. And that's where the complexity starts to come into play with consuming parsers through our API. Right, so for example, it was discussed earlier that if you change your MPL code, it can have some pretty dramatic effects on any API clients that you've written. Like fields can just be missing. So if you expect them, you query the API and it with one MPL set, TCP dot sequence number was there, and the next MPL set they renamed it or something, and you're floored. You're on the. This is something that you really have to be aware of with writing a an API. So let's start with some basic functions. Right, so their API to read the frame data. Right, so to do this, you will the two types of frame data. One is fields. You can think of fields as a human representation of data that's actually on the wire. Right, so if something comes along in a frame payload, most of that data will be described in a field or a structure. That's just how we organize data that was directly retrieved from the wire. There are also these things called properties. So properties are pretty complicated, actually, but also they're very simple. I know that's sort of a paradox, but so properties represent data that's derived from parse data or field data. One of the biggest applications of properties are conversations. So a conversation is basically an aggregation of frames based on some similar properties, like the five tuple if you're in network speak. You can also define custom properties that can represent anything you want. And where the complexity comes in is properties all look the same, but the internal organization of the data could be dramatically different. Right, so you can have a property that is a simple string. You can have a property that's an array. You can have a property that's a dictionary lookup. You can have a property that looks at a pairs of data. You have property that are scoped locally, scoped globally, scoped to the frame. Right, so there are all these different ways to consume properties that really make life interesting when you're writing code to consume our MPL. And remember that it's all driven by this 425,000 lines of parser code that changes. So along with parsing, you can also do filtering. So if you're not familiar with the filtering concepts in NetMon, it basically allows you to write a logical expression that test some frame condition. Right, you can filter on a TCP port 80, for example, or you can filter on an address, or you can filter on a HTTP gets, or anything that is describable in NPL, field, structs, properties, anything that you can write a filter to test. And their API to install those filters and test frames individually, you can as they come in through your callback function. So the analogy is a display filter. So in NetMon, you go and type an expression and apply, and then it starts evaluating that filter for every frame. So you can do that same action with the API. And if anything goes wrong during parsing, there's a facility in the API to deliver feedback based on what happened. Why didn't this thing parse? And that comes fallback. So the bottom line is, if you're going, once you start dealing with parsing, it's probably worth your while to take a look at the NPL language spec. So that way you will understand what the derivative of the frame information that you're going to consume, where it's coming from. So the language spec describes all the different ways to build parsers, but it also describes a syntax in which you can write NPL expressions or any kind of expressions, filter expressions, and how the data is organized. And the language spec is also installed when you install NetMod. So a little bit more on parsing. So our API allows you to build this thing that we call parser configuration. So parser configuration is basically a collection of settings in one neat package that you can apply to many frames. And it's sort of a reflection of our implementation in our parsing engine. Right, so so for example, the things that you can put in a configuration are what fields inside a frame do you want to retrieve, what properties, which capture thread. So what do I mean by thread? Right, so you can, with our API, you can actually have multiple captures happening simultaneously. You think of those as a thread of information, like perhaps on two different adapters. Why is it important to take the thread into account when parsing? It's because the network data is stateful. Right, so depending on what your application is, frames that were delivered at time zero may be relevant when processing frames delivered at time one. Right, so without keeping that thread context intact, your parsing results may be inaccurate. Right, so that's why you are able to provide the thread in which you are, why that's important when it comes to parsing. Question? Okay. So and the threads are all, the frames are always delivered first in, first out in the queue. And but there are some, well, let me back up a second. So there are some for capturing, there's a way to tweak that a bit, but not for, sorry, for loading capture files, there's a way to tweak that. But for capturing, there's always FIFO. So I touched earlier on what some of the minor differences were between fields and properties, things like scoping and from the language specification. When it comes to retrieving this information from the API, there are also some slight differences in the API for looking at properties versus looking at fields. Like for example, for field data, we actually broke down all of the API for by type. Right, so there are API for getting numbers, for 32-bit, 8-bit, 64, assigned, strings, arrays. But for properties, it's not quite the same. So most of the things are come through two API instead. You have to look at the details of the property in order to figure out how to interpret it. And the reason for that is just because of the different ways that properties, there's so many different ways that properties can manifest themselves. That list would have, we really would have exploded our API had we took that same approach with properties. But fields are usually quite, have a very finite type space. Type domain, I should say. So when you're adding fields and properties to the parser configuration, you're given back an ID that you can use in your code to correlate what this parser field is doing when you go to consume it, right? So it just gives you back an ordinal that you can hash tables or indexes store what your parser configuration is when consuming it. Because most of the time, you're going to set up your parsers in one section of your application, then you're going to consume the data in a completely different section. The IDs allow you to bridge these two pieces of software together. Oh, there's another important concept to remember about parsing, and that's called optimization. So in a nutshell, Optimization is the term that we use in our parsing engine to describe how much work the parser is going to do. And that turns into performance, how fast the parser is. So by default, we will parse the entire frame. Okay, so that means that when any frame arrives, NetMom will look at the entire possible ways to parse this frame and apply all those rules to build up the set of collection of fields that are inside the frame. That is a pretty, well, that's, I wouldn't say exhaustive, but it takes relatively more time than the latter case, where you tell NetMind exactly what you need. Right, so if I'm looking for a particular piece of data, or maybe a set of data, I can tell NetMind ahead of time, you know what, this frame could have a gazillion different fields in it, but I only need these 10. Tell it ahead of time, and our parsing engine will optimize its, well, we'll figure out a way to just get you that information without considering the other possible information on that saves you a tremendous amount of time. So the best practice for using a parser in your API would be to be a little predictive as far as what data you're going to consume if you're interested in performance. And like I said, our parsing engine does all this work for you, so you don't have to worry about the details of optimization. Question? So the question was, what is the granularity of optimization? Is it at the protocol level? Is it at the field level? Is it at the property level? The answer is that it's at the field slash property level. Right, so if you specifically ask for a leaf, if you think of this as a tree, so if you ask for a particular type of leaf from a parsing, then we'll only do enough work to get that leaf. Same thing for properties and fields. Or you can say protocol, for example. You can, if you say protocol.tcp, then we'll ignore all the other protocols and just parse what is necessary for a TCP. But with optimization, there's a caveat with embedded or encapsulated protocols. Like some protocols can be payloads of other protocols, and we'll pull those into the fray as well. So be careful with those kind of scenarios. IP is pretty popular one, like PP or RPC is another example where you can have HTTP, things like that. Remember, the key thing here is performance. Right, so if you're going to do some intensive parsing in your API application, you may want to keep optimization in mind. If you don't really care about performance or you're not parsing, then don't worry about it. But it's basically a time-saving feature that the engine provides. The way to expose it is by telling us what you want to do ahead of time. So there's no magic dust or anything you need to get it. All right, so last few points about parsing. We seem to be running a bit behind, so I'm going to zoom through. I might be able to make it. So for data retrieval, as I said before, you can, with fields, you can, there's a number of ways you can retrieve the actual parsed data. Right? We interpret as a string, as a number, as a byte array, etc. There are also API for querying details about a field. Like you may want to know what the encoding of a field was, or what the, how many bytes it consumes, or all this information that's described in the MPL. Well, there are API for retrieving information about specific fields or specific properties. Right, so if you want to know if a property that has a simple name is a multi-value storage property, or if it's a string property, you can get that information. There's also a way to get the display format that was used when the MPL author wrote that code. Right? So IPv6 is a great example. So this is just a big number, but when you look at it from a human perspective, you want to see the nice little colon delimited with percent signs and all these things. So when they wrote the MPL, they actually wrote a format string to, or a way to display that. So you can use our API to retrieve that representation, so you don't have to do that work again in your API client. There are also some built-in properties for frames that Netmon takes care of. Things like the timestamp. What else is there? The media type. So would this come over a wireless interface, or is it an Ethernet? There's also a cool feature that you can do with Netmon to parse arbitrary buffers. Right. So let's just say you want to capture from a USB USB bus. Right. So by default, there's no way that Netmon can capture that. But let's say you write your own USB driver, and you can actually get this data that's traveling over the bus. Now you want to consume it. So you wrote a, you're an expert with NPL, so you went and wrote a parser for USB power state messages or whatever you write it for. So you can teach Netmon how to interpret this data, and then you can use our API or the UI to parse to represent this data. So you can basically capture from another source, put that in a buffer, and hand that to our API and say, parse this using this set of parsers. And we'll treat it just like it was a protocol that we understand very well, but you need to write the NPL to actually recognize what this data is. So there's API for that. So this is a very custom capturing scenarios that are not sort of within the INDIS umbrella. So a good application of this would be, for example, for .NET. So imagine in .NET you're listening to a TCP socket. Well, when that data is delivered to you, it's not going to have IP header information. It's not going to have media information. All it's going to have is a TCP payload. It may even be, won't be reassembled. It probably will also be reassembled, so you'll get the entire message. How do you parse that? Right, so our API, if you're capturing, you're going to have all this low-level information, but I don't care about that. I just want you to parse this TCP stream. So this is the API that you would use to achieve that. Instead of capturing, you would actually pass that TCP bit bucket that you receive from the .NET call straight to the API and tell it which protocol to start parsing from. So let's switch gears a bit and talk about capture files. Right, so this is the standard .cap file that you're used to seeing. So, and you're doing a live capture scenario, you as the API client control how those frames are saved. So the frame callback is delivered, you can decide whether or not you want to store that frame off into a capture file. Right, so the API for opening the capture file in our various modes, where you can create chain captures, which basically break large traces up into smaller chunks. And there's also circular captures, which is basically good for capturing the last known or the latest information for a particular size. Right? So I don't care about what happened 2 days ago, but I want to know what happened an hour ago. So you just set it up in circular mode and just let it run, and it'll drop things off the circular buffer as it fills up. And our API supports both of those modes. There's also API for reading a capture file. Right, so you can point it at a .cap file and say open and get frame, and you can iterate through each frame. You can also control the sequence of retrieval. So there's an API to basically tell it to put it in timestamp order if things may be out of order in the capture file when you captured it. There's some cases where you're capturing on multiple devices, you can get into a state where some frames are delivered that have a higher timestamp than other frames. That's a consequence of how INDIS gave them to us. On like a multi-homes machine or something like that. So you can control how that is open with the API. So outside of capturing and parsing, what are some other things that you can do with the API? The one thing is reassembly. Who knows what reassembly means? Couple people. So basically what that is a way for Netmon to automatically aggregate frames that are fragmented by the protocol. So for example, if you have a TCP send that occurred on the end system, by the time it got to your local system, the network or whatever may have broken it up into 10 frames where it was 5 frames on the other end. So reassembly allows you to collect all those and put them back into the one frame, then parse them. So the API does that. There are also API for retrieving what are called frame comments. So for Netmon 3.3, we added this feature where you can annotate frames. Right, so in the UI, you can select the frame and type your own little custom comment there and save that directly in the capture file. Their API to retrieve only those comments. You can't set comments on a frame. You can also query version information. You can configure where your NPL source code is coming from with your parsers. And there's also some housekeeping functions for closing handles and closing, freeing up memory that was allocated by the API. So, question. So the question was, for live capture scenarios where NDIS may deliver frames out of order? Well, for loading capture files, yes, you can do that. But for live captures, you cannot do that. But you can also do some in your API callback. You can do some management of time there. Right, so remember, you're getting the frames in pretty much simultaneously as they're being delivered to your callback. You can inspect the time stamp there. And before you add them to your capture file, you can make sure that the sequence is correct. Right, so so then you don't need to rely on the loading. Oh yeah, good point. So Shin is going to, in our advanced topics, is going to touch a little bit on the ways you can out of the box scenarios. And that's one of them. Okay, so what are the challenges? So I touched on parsers. Right, so the parsers change. It's sort of like an organism, but your Netmon API is static, right? So you have to be able to deal with the fact that your expert probably, most of the time we try to be good citizens when we, at least Microsoft updates parsers. So we try not to break you. And so we realize that people are writing applications against these things or expect certain behaviors. Also, most of the protocols don't change that much. And so when you look at where our churn in our parsers comes from, most of the time it's either fixing a bug that was reported. Most of those are behavioral, so the actual data structures don't change that much. But how those data structures are populated may change because there's a parser bug or some RFC or some extension to a protocol. And that sort of touches on the latter change as we add content. Right? So we'll add parsers for the next operating system version, or Office, or OCS, or whatever. So most of our churn comes from those two. So the actual domain of data is relatively static. So the risk that you take with having the names of the parsers or parse fields in your code is not that high. But it is something to be aware of, especially if you're a managed developer, right? You're used to strongly typed systems, but in NPL and Netmon, there is no, everything is sort of analogous to reflection. You have to ask what's there, and then, right, and that touches on the last point. So the C concepts are completely foreign to .NET. So .NET doesn't care about handles and callbacks, and there's much more elegant ways to do the same thing in .NET. So if you're used to programming that way and you want to use our API in its current state, there's a bit of brain skewing that you have to do. Getting the cue that my time is up, so it was lucky that we're at the question slide. So a couple more questions and then we can call. Is there a way to disable offloading? So there are two types of offloading, right? So there's the chimney offload and there's the task offload. Right, so for chimney offload, it's sort of out of our hands. NDIS will turn that off if it detects that, in most cases, if there is something, some filter or protocol driver present that wants to inspect data that the chimney wants to hide from you. Right, so NDIS sort of governs that. So for other task offloads, like IPsec is a good example. Right, so for some network interfaces are able to offload the decryption of IPsec traffic straight to the hardware. In those scenarios, Netmon will actually may benefit you because you may see the text in the clear on the inbound path. But for the outbound path, you will still see the data, but it may change. It may not be what actually went out on the wire. Right. So there's no facility in Netmon to control that. There is a thing in Netmon called P-mode, promiscuous mode, where you can tell it to monitor everything, not just stuff bound from my MAC address. But with the API, you can configure the adapter to be in promiscuous mode so that it can basically monitor anything that happens to come along. By default, it'll skip. Oh, so the question was, is there a link that you can see the API? Yes. So basically, there's two ways. Chum file, install Netmon, and go to help. And there's help topics. You can see it that way. Or go to program files, network monitor, Microsoft Network Monitor 3 API, and there's a .h file sitting in that directory. And you can see the header file that you would include to actually build an API app. So, there's no other questions. Thank you for your time.